Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:41 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 22nd, and the S&P 500 is pretty much unchanged on the day. Well, when we look at the chart on the daily, on a daily basis, we've had a very impressive rebound. It moved to a new high. There was a short-term overbought condition that is being now being unwound, and when we look at it on a weekly basis, we get a little bit of additional perspective because it tells us that we're right in the region of the trend mean. And over the course of the last 18 months, the market hasn't really gone anywhere. It was at a peak around this exact same level at the beginning of 2018. So we've been in a volatile ranging phase for a year and a half already. Well, at this service, we've often characterized medium-term corrections as being anything from 6 months out to 2 years. Well, this is looking like one of the longer ones, and there is the potential, at least, that if the market can continue to hold the majority of the gains put in over the last 4 months, that we're going to see a successful break on the upside. There is, of course, a counter-argument, and there is always a counter-argument, the contention that a market climbs a wall of worry is as true today as it ever has been in the past. Obviously, the thing that we're worrying about right now is the trade war and the ability of corporate earnings to continue to advance against a background where there is going to be a knock-on effect, both in terms of tariffs, inflation, and then potentially even a further or an official boycott of US goods in China. I would say, for example, that there is already a drive to not to buy US goods, but the question is whether that will be an outright ban is still hanging out there as a possibility. Then, of course, you have the potential that rare earth metals are going to become a political weapon again. It's been nearly a decade since the last time China restricted supply, and that time it was to Japan. Well, that sent prices rocketing higher. The question now is whether they're going to do the same thing to the USA. Certainly the USA is beginning to invest in infrastructure, so if China wants to use that as a weapon on this particular occasion, it has got a limited window in which to do so. But that is hanging out there as a potential threat. But on the other side of the ledger, well, what we are certainly presented with is the fact that corporate earnings are still coming in really quite firm, and the PKW Buyback Achievers Index had pushed on to new high ground. The fact that it had posted a lower high at the September peak was certainly a sign that some impetus in this particular source of demand had been waning, but buybacks have been surging so far this year, and it is also testing the region of the trend mean right now. If it can continue to hold the $60 area, that would be particularly beneficial. But the much bigger point is that buybacks have been the primary avenue through which monetary and fiscal stimulus have been able to enter asset prices, particularly in the stock market. Companies have, regardless of what our perspective is on the benefits or otherwise of buybacks, companies have clearly decided that that is the best use of their capital, and it has been a massive conduit for trillions of dollars to flow into the stock market. So the much bigger question now is, rather than to think about the rationale for or the benefits of it, but rather to think about what could potentially change it. Well, one, of course, would be that corporate earnings start declining. Well, that would also have an effect on the PE ratio of the market, and it would also have an effect on the forward earnings and the just the outlook for stock market performance generally. And then, of course, it would have an effect on the companies themselves with the availability of cash that they would have then to do the buybacks. Then there is the additional question about goodwill sitting on balance sheets. Now, we're not going to probably see that goodwill questioned until there is a recession. But then companies generally then, because earnings start declining and because some of that goodwill would get written off, well, then they would have to start defending their credit ratings. Well, if they have to do that, then they're unlikely to be buying back their own shares or even paying dividends. So that's also something that we need to be potentially aware of. This whole question about fallen angels hasn't evaporated. There's still a lot of goodwill sitting on balance sheets that is largely worthless. Now, some of the companies that have got a lot of that goodwill are just starting to come to the market now. Uber, having rallied for a few days, is starting to roll over again. We have more back history for Lyft because it was able to list about 4 or 5 weeks ahead. But Lyft is still in a downtrend, but it is coming back up now to test its sequence of lower rally highs. So the big question is whether that is going to be able to push through that $60 area. Of course, the big question is what's all going to happen with China? The stock market there was also unchanged in here today, but it is not rallying, and it is right in the region of the trend mean. One of the points I've been making over the course of the last 5 or 6 months is that bull markets in China are state-sponsored, and the big question at the moment is not so much whether they're willing to support the stock market, but to the extent to which they're going to continue to support the currency. And the renminbi does look likely that it is going to test that 7 level before they move in to try and squeeze the shorts. When we look at the offshore renminbi, that is going to be the avenue through which they do try to squeeze the shorts. And we have when we look at the chart, it is quite clear that we've had a very significant move for the dollar here, and 7 represents a very key area of potential resistance. But considering that China has got limited tools to really affect the US economy, simply by virtue of the fact that what the USA needs, China is not the only supplier of, except, for example, rare earth metals and some other small commodities. Calling back pandas from San Diego Zoo is hardly going to be a catastrophic event for the US economy. Therefore, what is it that China can do to protect itself or to blunt the impetus of the USA's determination to, unwind China's global aspirations? Well, they can start breaking sanctions. So they could start to buy more oil from Iran. But oil prices were in negative territory in here today, down about $1.50. And that was on the back of a build in inventories in the USA. The US is now the marginal producer of oil globally. In fact, arguably, the USA has got a vested interest in having somewhat higher oil prices, considering the benefit that is going to accrue to the economy from exports. But nonetheless, it is privately owned, and therefore they have a clear ambition to pump as much as possible. Well, WTI was also down, and down more in here today. And what that suggests is that $60 is now coming back into focus. This is a lower high. We haven't had one of those. This is also a larger pullback that we've seen since December. And it's going to have to hold that $60 area if this ranging advance is going to persist. That also corresponds with the region of the trend mean. When we look at natural gas prices, they had to come all the way back down to $2.50 and bounced. Well, that bounce is now being unwound, and it wasn't a particularly impressive bounce to begin with. When we look at European gas prices, and in the UK, the price has continued to decline. And That is a benefit to the UK, considering that it has moved from being an energy exporter to importer over the course of the last 15 years. This decline in natural gas prices in the UK has been stunning in terms of its severity. There's clearly a short-term oversold condition. We did have a very clear upward dynamic a few weeks ago, but that has not represented a low of more than short-term significance. I do think, though, that it is softening up the market, and it's quite likely we're going to see a bounce coming through at some stage, but not much evidence of it just yet. Well, with this pressure coming to bear on the energy sector, I think it's worth keeping an eye on the fortunes of Royal Dutch Shell. It was in positive territory in here today, and it is now pushing on to new recovery highs. It has bounced from the region of the trend mean, but it has replaced a short-term oversold condition with a short-term overbought condition. Considering that the nature of the rally we've had over the last 5 months, then it has not been able to sustain upward breaks, and therefore the risk here is that we're going to get some additional consolidation. Going back to the China argument, what is it that China can do? Well, we've already seen that they've become more active with North Korea, and North Korea launching more missiles. So, and China has previously used proxies like North Korea, or indeed Vietnam, during the Vietnam War, as a way of expressing its view internationally. They are also feting the Prime Minister of Vanuatu, and they're building a port there. Well, that is ostensibly to protect shipping lanes on the migration route up from Australia, but of course, it's also a means of projecting power across the South Pacific. So that is the other thing that they're doing. They are beefing up their military. Well, the additional thing that we're likely to see is China is going to start building its own infrastructure for providing semiconductors. Well, the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index is right in the region of its trend mean. This is where it needs to find support. It had a very abrupt rally. It's having an equally abrupt pullback, but it needs a clear upper dynamic to confirm a return to demand dominance. It isn't simply what's going on in China is starting to affect this index. When we look at what's happened today with Qualcomm, it popped on the upside 3 weeks ago because of the success of its case against the settlement of its case against Apple. Well, the primary argument Apple had been using was that Qualcomm was basically abusing its position and had exacted unfair terms in terms of the kind of compensation it was wanted for the use of its technology. Well, there was an antitrust case that came in against Qualcomm in here today that upheld that view. So they're obviously going to appeal, and this chart has been really very choppy, but the big question now is whether it is going to be able to hold this break or up from this range and confirm support around the $70 area. Of course, there is a solid argument for why Qualcomm has fallen victim to antitrust, because it's of their whole product pricing mechanism. They take perhaps a $5 modem and put it in, and it's put into a $500 phone, and then they charge as if the item was they charge based on the total value of the full item rather than the component. So that has helped to boost profits way above what they would normally have been. And the bigger question for the company now is whether they can continue to pursue that kind of strategy. That's also a wider question about pricing in the semiconductor sector generally. And that is something that they're going to have to overcome. So considering that China is at a point where they really do want to create their own industry. That is not going to happen overnight. It might take a decade. And they're going to throw whatever capital is required in order to do it. But the much bigger point is that the business models of these companies is also starting to be questioned. So that is a rather big headwind, and it's going to have to demonstrate a return to demand dominance soon, not just for this share, but for the wider sector. Now, when we look at what's going on in India, well, we're on, I think, basically a little bit of hiatus until we get the official result, but the market is already beginning to price in that Narendra Modi has won. I think the much bigger picture, longer term, is what happens with the currency. And the rupee is now right in the region of the trend mean. It's held a progression of higher reaction lows since the beginning of the fourth quarter last year. Now, this wouldn't be the first time that it has rallied. There have been occasions previously when the rupee has been able to rally. But the pace of the downtrend has moderated. And there is, an increasing rationale for why we might anticipate that the rupee should do better from here. Manufacturing is starting to pick up. iPhones are now being produced in India for the domestic market. And an increasingly large number of companies are migrating there for the simple reason that they have tens of millions of young people entering the workforce every year and a clear incentive to find jobs for them. So manufacturing is the clear answer to that question. And generally, you get the manufacturing first and the infrastructure afterwards. It's seldom the other way around. They do tend to move hand in hand. The more manufacturing that migrates to India, the greater the incentive there will be to plow money into infrastructure development, not least roads, ports, and railways. I think that's a rather significant factor. Obviously, the bigger question is whether it can continue to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows. But the strength of, or the relative strength at least, of the currency has been a boost for the performance of foreign-owned funds. When we look at lots of different markets, then currency is obviously going to have a major impact. Well, it's having a positive impact for India, but the Australian dollar, for example, is trending down, and it was unable to rally in here today. Well, there are increasing estimates about just how much the RBA is going to cut interest rates. It might be once, twice, or even four times. Australian house prices are declining, and they haven't stopped declining just yet. I did pull out this this chart in here today of the Australian house prices. This is the biggest pullback we've seen in years, and it is a spectacular advance going from 20 to 150. So that is a spectacular advance, but leverage ratios, particularly for consumer debt, are among the highest in the world in Australia, and you have floating rate notes or floating rate mortgages and full recourse as well. So you have a consumer that is highly levered and very exposed to interest rates. That suggests that the RBA may be cutting rates more than people might anticipate. It also suggests that we're going to get a further concentration, or compression of government bond yields. This is a global phenomenon. So when we see what's going on in terms of the commonality that we see in global bonds, there is a clear conclusion that we're going to see lower interest rates and we're going to see much more demand for bonds. The 10-year yield in Australia is plumbing new depths. It has never been this low before. And the chances are that this is still a really quite consistent downtrend. If the RBA cuts interest rates, then we're going to see yields coming down significantly. It's a very similar story with New Zealand. The New Zealand government bond yield is also compressing in here. And Then when we look at the New Zealand dollar, well, it hasn't quite broken down yet, but there has been a clear downward bias to trading over the course of the last month. So that is also suggestive of some additional downside. Now, or well, that there would obviously be strength in the market. The New Zealand Fully Gross Index is one of the only indices in the world that is continuing to push on and is in fact beginning to accelerate. So what we're clearly seeing is the transmission of easier monetary policy, and the potential for interest rate cuts is translating into interest in the stock market. And it's a similar story with the ASX 200. Then the market there was also in positive territory in here today. So people are pricing in the potential that the currency is going to be devalued further, and that will be positive for nominal prices. The resources index has been reasonably steady, but it's been spotty. When we think about what exactly is going on in terms of China, there is potentially evidence of slowing growth. And when you've got Xi Jinping talking about a new long march, well, you have to start to think that they are preparing the population for slower economic growth. Well, rare earth metals are starting to find their feet. Then we also have the uptick in interest in lithium miners. And that is following some rather deep pullbacks we've seen over the last year. Orocobre, for example, has had been one of the best performers all the way through 2017 and gave up the entire advance by the beginning of this year. But it is now coming back to test the region of the trend mean. When we look at Livent, which was spun off from FMC Corp as their lithium play, it's still trending downwards. Well, that is, I think, potentially because of Tesla, which has also been trending downwards, and arguably the pace of the advance is accelerating lower. There is obviously a clear downward bias to trading here, and it failed to find support in the $250 area. We're now coming back down to the lows posted in 2016 and 15, and indeed in 14. So if it doesn't bounce now, then there is a real possibility that we're going to see some major credit event in Tesla. And when we look at their bonds, then we can also see that yields are rising rather quickly. Simply looking at the 2025 callable bond, then yields are now at 9%. And this is a meaningful change, because until just this week, we really hadn't seen a movement in the bonds, but now people are starting to get rather antsy about the ability of Tesla to sustain its operations. So that, I think, is really something that needs to be paid attention to. What it is also suggestive of is that some of these companies that had been persisting and existing based on the availability of credit are starting to run into trouble. And that is, I think, also a testament to the fact that credit is not as available as it had been, although for some companies that is not quite true. What I am very conscious of is that the central bank balance sheets chart has been trending down again, and it was at a new low last week. Well, the primary reason for that is because of the strength of the US dollar. And the dollar was in positive territory again in here today. That is more a factor of the weakness elsewhere that rather than the particular strength of the US dollar, particularly in view of the fact that there is a massive quantity of debt that needs to be issued and refinanced. But so far, there is ample demand for that debt. 10-year treasury yields, or prices, I should say, have been in an uptrend now for most of the last 9 months, and we're in positive territory again in here today. This looks like a consistent trend, so it does look like we're going to see further compression in yields. Against that background, gold continues to hold the region of the $1,275 area, but higher bond prices and the continued strength of the US dollar represent headwinds. It really does need to rally enough to break the sequence of lower rally highs in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.